always be clear where you get your conservative talk.
The St. Louis Business Journal is now reporting that liberal billionaire George Soros is the largest shareholder of Odyssey,
the parent company of KMOX and 97.1 Talk.
Soros' maneuver raises critical questions about the future of media ownership and influence.
Money and attention is power. And when he has the money and he controls what's on the radio stations, he's going to be able to control the minds, essentially hundreds of millions of Americans.
St. Louis's trusted source and number one.
For conservative talk.
This is News Talk STL.
For podcast articles and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
What's going on at the college level and the colleges, Columbia, NYU, and others is a disgrace. And it's really on Biden. He has the wrong signal. He's got the wrong tone. He's got the wrong words. He doesn't know who he's backing. And it's a mess. He can't put two sentences together, frankly. He is the worst president in the history of our country.
4:06 and welcome into the Tuesday rainy edition of the Tim Jones and Chris Arp show. We've got a lot to cover today. You would think the big stories this week would be day six, the resumption of the Trump trial. You would think the big story of today would be the Senate possibly voting on aid to Ukraine, Taiwan, and Israel. But no, Mr. Speaker Tim Jones, the big story today is our elite Ivy League campuses are on fire, and they are showing us who they really are with these anti-Hamas, anti-Semite protests.
Mm-hmm. They sure are, Chris Arps. And, you know, it puts in stark contrast the decision that Americans have this fall, right? I mean, one political party is appeasing these protesters, is looking the other way. Many might argue they're supporting the Death to America crew that's overtaking our college campuses. Look, folks may not like Donald Trump's personality. They may not like his bombast. They may not like his ego and his arrogance, but you gotta like his policies as compared to the Death to America crew. The Democratic Party is responsible for what we are now seeing. This is the fruit, Chris. We always say, oh, the chickens are going to come home to roost. I think the chickens are roosting and they're laying a lot of rotten eggs. This is what happens when you have college campuses overtaken by a Marxist leftist ideology, a hate America ideology. Well, 20, 30, 40 years later, we see the results of those efforts. And I have to ask the left, what do you want to replace this America with? This America, despite all its warts, its wounds, its errors and its sins, which it's had many, is still the greatest place on earth to pursue freedom, liberty, democracy, and your own personal dream. Tim, so what do you want to replace that with?
Tim, Columbia University has canceled their classes for the rest of the semester. There are going to be classes that are online. I think University of Southern California has canceled their commencement ceremonies for next month because they are frightened of these protests by these Hamas protesters, Hamas sympathizers. Basically, it's just absolutely amazing what we're witnessing. This is something that you would think it's 1930s Germany, you know, Kristallnacht in Berlin, where you mm-hmm. just see this outright hatred for Jewish students, where classes have to be postponed or classes have mm-hmm. to be online. You've got parents that are telling their kids to come home. We don't feel that you are safe on campus. And this is your modern day Democratic Party. And because they are so ran by the left wing of their party, the radicals, Joe Biden has to put out kind of a lukewarm telling them that they shouldn't be doing this. It's not as forceful as it should be.
Chris, Patriots owner Robert Kraft, Columbia University mega donor, has ended his support to the university. And Chris, that's what it's going to take. It's going to take people like that to say, thanks, but no thanks. I won't be sending my millions and billions your way any longer. Kraft saying this is no longer an institution I recognize. Chris, these universities charge students $70,000, $80,000, $90,000 a year to get an education, not to sit in the university square and protest the state of Israel and advocate for genocide of the Jewish people. That's not what these universities are supposed to be for. Chris, I spent nearly 10 years in New York, and back then in the 90s, I really felt, Chris, I know we still had a lot of problems. I know we still had racial issues in this country. I know there was vestiges of segregation. But for the most part, in a place like New York City felt like the ethnic melting pot of the United States of America. I had friends of all shapes, sizes, colors, creeds, codes. And I had a ton of friends, Jewish friends. I had one friend, Chris, with dual citizenship with Israel. He served in the IDF. He was a dual Israeli and American citizen. And we all got along. We all studied together. We all debated together. We argued together. We had fun together. And now I look back, and this is a New York City I do not recognize. This is a more segregated, militant, dangerous place than it was back in the mid-1990s. We've regressed in this country, and it's because of one political party, as you identified, I agree with, the Democrats.
And we've talked the last couple of days, where we don't see much sense in shutting down highways, disrupting people's travel plans so they can't get to the airport. It doesn't seem to make a lot of sense. I saw a video this afternoon where some lady, Hamas sympathizer, was berating Alec Baldwin, of all people, at a Starbucks, asking him, why did you kill this woman? And in her next breath, she was saying, say free Palestine. Okay. And she was like harassing him constantly, saying, asking him, telling him he needs to say free Palestine. Alec Baldwin, being who he is, of course, knocked the cell phone out of her hand. But, you know, disrupting people's lives and making things more difficult for them does not bring sympathy to your cause. And I can't believe I'm saying this again, Tim, but our good friend Senator Fetterman from Pennsylvania seems to agree with us.
But it is not appropriate or legal, or it's helpful to advance your argument if you show up in a Starbucks with a bullhorn and start yelling at people, and that doesn't make you noble, it just makes you an ass. It's very American to protest and to do that in the appropriate way, then I absolutely support that. I'm not suggesting that you have to agree with my view, but it's just saying it doesn't really allow you to disrupt lives and to inflict those kinds of damages on people that are just trying to get on with their lives.
Whoever heard of a stroke making you smarter? But it seems to be the case, and I'm not trying to make light of stroke victims, of course not, but Fetterman seems to be making sense now since he has been in the Senate and probably seen real life and how things really are. And he said what we've been saying. This is just plain stupid, disrupting people's lives.
Yeah, and you know what? Congratulations to him for his recovery. Chris, he sounds better now than he has in months. And yeah, leave it to stroke survivor, liberal Democrat John Fetterman to be the voice of reason in the Democratic Party. I don't think if anybody would have asked you or I that 7 months ago, if we'd ever say those words, we'd probably tell him you're absolutely nuts. But here he is being, you know, an old school liberal, right? Liberals, old school liberals, used to be accepting people. In fact, they argued they were the most accepting people on the planet, and it was Republicans who were closed-minded. My, how the tables have turned, where it's the Republican Party standing up for the individual, no matter who they are, no matter where they came from, no matter what they look like. And the Democratic Party has become the party of some, it's like a weird, well, they are a weird blend because they want to be everything to everyone, right? They've become this like, they become the supporters of authoritarian theocracy known as the Muslim Jihad. I mean, it's the most bizarre turn of events. And you know, Jewish Americans, all y'all out there, I know there's many in St. Louis. There's many that listen to us every day. Thank you, first of all, for listening. You got to talk to your colleagues, your family members, and you got to ask them, why in the world would any Jewish American vote for the Democratic Party at this point in time?
Representative John Carter, he represents Texas, Tim, the 31st district in Texas. He has a congressional office there in Washington, D.C., in Georgetown, and the left showed their displeasure with his support of Israel. They threw a bunch of red paint on the doors of his office, vandalized his office. Of course, he said this will not intimidate him and it won't work and it won't make him not stand with Israel like he has. But boy, these people are just absolutely radical, and you'd expect, I guess, for them to be ramping up what they're doing. We forgot to mention it at the beginning of the show that this is the second day of Passover, and so we wanted to wish all of our friends happy Passover, and maybe that's why we're seeing all of this activism the last couple of days that's ramped up to get more attention.
Yeah, I don't think there's any coincidence there at all. I think it's a consequence. I think that's exactly, I think it was exactly planned this way. And Chris, if you look at these, how is it that all of these, quote, spontaneous outbursts and protests on all of these disparate college campuses that are separated many by hundreds, if not thousands of miles, Chris, why do they all look the same, right? Why do they all kind of have the same feel? Why are they all saying the same chants and mottos? I think this is simply, you know, you call me a conspiracy theorist, but all of our conspiracy theories have come true over the last 3 or 4 years. I think this is orchestrated from the top down. Look, George Soros. Yeah, okay, yeah. I cited the boogeyman. George Soros, and he's got buddies too, right? We learned about the Swiss billionaire a few days ago. What's his name? There's a Swiss billionaire out there. We learned about him from our buddy Scott Walter, who wrote the book about Arabella, Arabella Advisor. So there's the Swiss billionaire, there's Soros, there's other billionaires out there. Chris, they want to destabilize the United States of America. Why? Mm-hmm. Because they can't have a country like America out there being an individual land of freedom, liberty, and free market capitalism, a land of federalism. They don't want that. They want everybody to be like the Euro socialist zone, right? They want countries that are largely dependent on large, gigantic government structures at their heads, oligarchs basically running the nation, the elites, right? So they can put in things like climate change and everything else. You can't have a country like the United States of America with its research and its ingenuity and its development. You can't have that. So that's why they want to destabilize and destroy it. And, you know, they tried with the prosecutors, and thankfully that has, you know, that's largely been unwound to some extent. So now they're using the Israeli-Hamas war to try to take another stab at knocking the world's, you know, leader of freedom and liberty off of its pedestal.
Big story of the day, of course, is day six of President Trump's hush money trial. I think that's how the tabloids used to like to say it. David Pecker, former owner of the National Enquirer, is on the stand. I thought that the Drudge Report had an interesting headline regarding him. Said David Pecker takes the stand and stands tall. I thought that was a very good, interesting.
Can you say that on the radio?
Euphemism right there. But his testimony, Tim, is stemming around the fact that the National Enquirer would buy stories from people that could damage Donald Trump personally or in his political life, and would sit on those stories. And that's part of the plot, the conspiracy, they say, to try to make this a campaign finance violation. But in its essence, is buying a story and sitting on it so it's not publicized, is that illegal?
I don't think so. Look, Chris, this doesn't seem to be like nothing that's occurring right now in the borough of Manhattan in this Trump hush money trial seems to me to be an equitable judicial proceeding. It seems like a kangaroo court reality TV show, right? I mean, you've got the star witness is a, you know, 12 times over known perjurer and liar, Michael Cohen. You've literally got one of the world's largest gossip rags. Now, you know, they got the publisher of that on the stand. The whole thing, it's making a mockery of our judicial system. And you know why that is? Because the prosecutor's prerogatives here are not pure, right? Usually a prosecutor brings a case not to, quote, get somebody, but to make sure that justice is done. This entire effort is to attack a political opponent. It very much appears like the Biden White House and the Biden DOJ are the ones really running this trial. Mm-hmm. And again, once again, it's one step away from our country being a third world banana republic.
Other big aspect of this trial today, Tim, too, is the prosecution is gone before the judge and said that Donald Trump has not abided by the gag order, and they are wanting to hold him in contempt. The president is pretty much has signaled that he's not going to pay any attention to any gag order. He feels that that is stepping on his First Amendment rights. How far do you think this will go? I mean, do you think that the judge will have to fine him some type of amount? And do you think it would ever get to the point if Donald Trump keeps flaunting the so-called gag order that he would put him in jail or put him in house arrest?
He might. He might. I think they have left the law far behind in this. This whole court proceeding is a joke. And the further the judge gets angry and pushes back on Donald Trump, I believe the more constitutional violations he creates. Now, look, I'm not saying Donald Trump's not going to be convicted. I hope I'm wrong. I believe Donald Trump will be convicted in this courtroom. And then I believe it will go up on appeal. It may have to go up to the Supreme Court of the United States of America. I believe eventually all of this will be thrown out. I believe that a gag order on a defendant in a criminal case is a violation of the First and Fourth Amendments to the United States Constitution. I believe this whole thing is a show, a joke, a witch hunt, and would never have happened if it wasn't Donald Trump and if he wasn't running for president of the United States.
I think the two wild cards on the jury, Tim, are the two attorneys that are on the jury. And I could see them throwing a monkey wrench in this. And because they're attorneys and knowing the law a little more than the rest of us, could see some things that they don't see it's right. And in good conscience, couldn't convict Donald Trump on. But that's just my speculation. Of course, I am not an attorney. You are the attorneys. But we will hold our breath and see. 507, Speaker Stump Speech.
Yes, I am going to talk about the fact that we are still waiting for things to get done here in Jefferson City. Chris, because of the efforts of the conservatives in the House and the Senate, there are at least four major bills waiting to be passed today. You know what they did in Jefferson City today? They adjourned early and went to a softball tournament. So priorities of the people. I think not.
That's the Speaker Stump Speech at 507, 524. Randy Tolbert, host of the Randy Tolbert Show, had a lot to talk to him about. 445, Chris's Corner. I will give an example of how these Ivy League colleges and these campuses have radicalized our students and turned them into lefties. But coming up is David Stokes, Director of Municipal Policy at the Show Me Institute. We'll talk to him about those darn red light cameras, and more money for Metrolink is coming soon. You're listening to the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show on 101.9 94.1 News Talk STL.
For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
Red light cameras getting the green light. The St. Louis Board of Aldermen voting yes to add the controversial safety measures. However, a past ruling saying they're unconstitutional in Missouri leaves many questions.
We probably will get sued over it again. However, we're confident that the bill that we have put together addresses the constitutional issues.
Board of Aldermen President Megan Green knows Monday's 12-2 vote in favor of red light cameras may bring on a lawsuit. The cameras won't go up until the city agrees on a vendor, which they have yet to do.
428, welcome back to the Tim Jones and Chris Sarp Show. Tim, I don't know about you, but this just seems like Groundhog Day to me when it comes to these red light cameras. Every time that you think that they are gone, that they're unconstitutional, that this was a bad idea, that's on the bankrupt, on the heap of bankrupt ideas, and they just seem to resurface.
Yeah, they do. And I'm wondering, Chris, why they would be more constitutional this go around than they were not the last go around. But, you know, maybe our next guest can help us fill in on some of that efforts and explain it to us better.
Let's bring him in.
David Stokes over at the Show Me Institute
in high school. You talk about this. I had a very short spiked.
It was like there's a flat spike somewhere in that stuff.
It wasn't very punky. It was more Leave It to Beaver-ish, maybe.
And as he does every Tuesday. Joining us is David Stokes, Director of Municipal Policy at the Show Me Institute. David, you are not an attorney, but you come from a family of attorneys, so we're going to put you on the spot here. What makes this latest red light camera incarnation not a unconstitutional affair?
Well, great to be on the air with you guys, as always. According to the city, so let's just take them for what they're explaining it, they've made changes to the law which may not make it effective and may or may not make it right, but they say it will make it constitutional based on prior court rulings. I have no idea if that's true or not, but they say because they're going to make certain through videos and photographs that the driver of the car is the one getting the ticket and not just randomly sending it to the license plate on the car, and that they're making sure a police officer reviews the file before the ticket goes out and not just an employee of the vendor who operates the cameras, and probably a few other things as well. Those are the two main ones. They believe this will be constitutional. They may well be right. As you properly introed, Chris, I'm not a lawyer. I know Tim is. I don't necessarily think that makes this program right. There's a part of me that wants to give the city the benefit of the doubt in that the red light, the traffic violence in our community is so bad. I want to see something done about it. And I want the city, not just the city, we talk about the traffic mayhem and we talk like it's only in the city of St. Louis, and it's not. It's throughout the region. But I want the city to take care of it. I also want them to do it constitutionally and effectively. I'm not sure that red light cameras are any of those things. I can't tell you how, like anyone who drives in the city or in our region, you see expired tags, cars without tags. Trust me, the correlation between cars and drivers blowing red lights at 40 miles an hour up and down Kings Highway or Hampton or Union or wherever and not having proper tags, I'd say that's a pretty high correlation. So I'm doubtful that sending tickets to the people doing the worst of these abuses is going to affect anything. To what I say, I'd be happy to... I'm also doing it in a constitutional fashion, and I'm sure that's yet to be...
Yeah, David, the red light cameras, an inanimate object, they're a pretty sore and pathetic excuse for the real problem in the city of St. Louis, which is the fact that the city's police department, which, you know, used to be one of the most admired departments in the land, is now one of the least respected, not because of the officers, but because of the way the city has treated them to the point where they are a ghost of their former selves. They are hundreds and hundreds of officers short. We don't have a red light camera problem. We have an officer problem. We have a people problem in this city of St. Louis. I mean, it's not just the people that are fleeing. Law enforcement's fleeing. Everybody's fleeing. I mean, you have a shell of a city that used to once be a mighty city barely 60, 70 years ago, right?
Well, you're absolutely right about the problem with prosecution. None of these red light cameras or any of these changes are going to matter if the people that I see almost daily blowing red light. And again, we want to stress, we're not talking about somebody running a yellow light where it's a little touchy here. We're talking about people going into the opposite lane at 30 miles an hour and intentionally blowing multiple red lights in a row. The type of actions that have led to deaths of people in downtown St. Louis and near St. Louis U when four people were killed in an accident. Downtown, just a few months ago, we saw that mother and daughter from Chicago killed. I mean, that's insane what's happening. And until you start charging and actually arresting people for blowing red lights at high rates of speed, not waiting for them to actually cause an accident or hurt somebody or kill somebody, but just doing it and make sure they get arrested and charged and jailed in the worst cases and for repeat offenders, then you're not going to have any improvement to any of this, no matter how many red light cameras you put around, because those new red light cameras, they'll stop, you know, the law-abiding citizens. They'll probably send some, you know, halfway bogus tickets for going too fast on a right turn on a red. But will they actually improve safety? I am doubtful. But again, I'd love to be wrong, and would be happy to be proven wrong if it can be done in an effective way and a legal and proper way.
Speaking with David Stokes, Director of Municipal Policy at the Show Me Institute. David, I've got a quiz for you, my friend. What do these two stories have in common? One, Metrolink is extending to the Mid-America Airport, and the Youth City Trolley Loop is starting up again for another fun-filled season. What do those two stories have in common, sir?
A lack of ridership is what they all have in common. The airport, the light rail, and the worst of all, perhaps, the trolley. Although I don't know what's worst of all in these three in situations. It's right. It's funny that these stories are all breaking at the same time. The trolley starts up again on Thursday, a trolley which has ridership so low, it's comical. It's two riders an hour, and I'm pretty sure that one of them is the driver on the trolley. Yeah, and now we expand that with Metrolink is expanding out to the Mid-America Airport. Now, let me be fair here. I get the extension from their final stop at Scott out to Mid-America Airport, and if you look at what they're spending on it, it's not crazy. I think it costs $98 million, which, yes, $98 million is a lot more money than I have, but by transit standards, it's not bad. So this extension is not awful. It's not nearly as bad as the extension they want to do, which is north-south in the city of St. Louis up and down Jefferson, which, and this is crazy, Tim and Chris, but the five-mile extension in southern Illinois is $98 million. They have a five-mile extension to the city, which is going to cost $1.1 billion. I cannot for the life of me figure out how the same distance is $1 billion more in the city of St. Louis. But it is. I'm not, these numbers are in the Post story. It's astonishing. Remember, the update, the proposed new expansion in the city, there's no tunnels in it. It's an at-grade route. So there's no major tunnels to build. They have the right-of-way, since they're going up and down Jefferson Avenue. So the right-of-way acquisition costs are minimal. How this can cost $900 million to $1 billion more for the same length is astonishing to me. But, you know, at some point, as we've said many times, with all of these things, the Mid-America Airport, which, listen to this, when it opened, they had projections of 2 million riders a year, 2 million passengers a year at Mid-America Airport. Last year, they had 163,000. Oh. And they were ecstatic about it. That was far higher than anything they've ever had. But they sold it to the public at 2 million passengers a year. And it's just, you follow this stuff, be it the trolley, light rail, California high speed rail, which is perhaps the worst of all, and all these, and you realize that spending enormous amounts of money is the point. The moving people, successful infrastructure, that's not the point. Spending huge amounts of taxpayer dollars is what matters, and everything else is, you know, a side deal. So it is inferior. It's funny that the trolley is coming up just as Metrolink is connecting to Mid-America Airport, but it's funny in an infuriating way because we spend so much money to achieve so very, very little.
Yeah, David, isn't this a perfect example of how government always picks the wrong winners and losers, right? I mean, there's certain parts of the country where public transit of this sort makes sense because the population, the congestion, the economics of it all work. You know, St. Louis is trying to be something it's not, right, David? I mean, we should be putting the money, as you always say, in, there are things that do make sense. I'm not saying we should have no public transit, but buses, especially the new modern versions, the cleaner versions, the bigger versions, you know, the kind of the accordion style that can haul more people around, those would make more sense. But putting all this light rail down, it just doesn't make sense for the way we're set up here in the Midwest, both geographically and demographically and population-wise, right?
It's absolutely right, and it doesn't make any sense at all. And you know what? We've connected. Whether we should have done it or not is moot. We've connected the parts of the area that do make some sense. We've connected the St. Lambert Airport to downtown to Clayton. We've brought it to the east side for the few commuters who use it. And now, you know, as I said, we're connecting it to Mid-America Airport out there for a cost that the cost of that project passes the smell test. You know, we can live with that. But now we're just going to throw, I don't want to say go throw good money after bad, because we're throwing bad money after worse money after bad money. But Lord almighty, these new proposals of the north-south side route are beyond crazy. I mean, they cost a fortune, and by their own projections, which are inevitably way too high, as their own history proves, but their own projections are decidedly unimpressive. 5,000 boardings a day for this north-south route. That's only about 2,500 people, because a commuter is going to be two boardings a day. For $1.1 billion for a route that is so busy with traffic right now, they don't even have a bus route serving it. And I think I mentioned that before on the show, but it's worth repeating. The demand for public transit along this north-south corridor is so low, they don't even have a bus system serving it. Yes, they have buses in those neighborhoods, but they don't have a bus serving this route. Yet suddenly they're going to spend $1.1 billion on light rail, and people are going to, you know, commuters are going to come out of the cornfields to play baseball in Iowa just because they built it up. I mean, it's beyond crazy, and it's only possible because they do all of this with other people's money. Mm-hmm, federal funds, mm-hmm. sales taxes from people who don't ride it. It's on and on and on, whether it's the Loop Trolley or Mid-America Airport or Metrolink Extension. It's other people's money, so they don't care how it's spent. They don't care how much they spend. They're judged, and by they, I mean the consultants and the planners and the employees of it. They're judged by expanding it, whether it works or not, and it's very, very frustrating. And I hope taxpayers are finally going to stand up and say no to this in the way that we saw some of the county executives on the East-West Gateway Board stand up and try and oppose the latest Metrolink extension a couple months ago.
Speaking with David Stokes, Director of Municipal Policy at the Show Me Institute. David, I think I already know how you feel about this, because I know how you feel about special taxing districts. But 20 North St. Louis County cities are proposing a special sales tax district for roads. And I can say, for someone who grew up in North County, when all the white folks started moving out to St. Charles County and out westward, the roads in North County are not taken care of to the point that they used to when I remember growing up. Is this a bad idea?
This is a bad idea. Funding roads and streets with these sort of general sales taxes is really poor public policy. I'd be much more comfortable if they tried a regional gas tax. And yes, that's politically very difficult. I get it. But I'd love to see them try a local gas tax attempt, add a couple pennies to the gas tax in those cities, which is legal for them to do. They have the right to do that. I'd like to see them try that. If it fails, I'll give them credit for trying something else. But this sort of regional general sales tax, so that somebody who walks to the store in North County, a senior citizen on a fixed income who walks to the store, is paying for the roads just as much as somebody who drives around, all drives up and down that region. And I'm in that area a lot, Chris, living in your city, where I'm up in North County a lot. So I know the roads in this community that they're talking about. And yes, they need to be improved. But I do think a special taxing district on a sales tax is a very poor idea. I think a dedicated gas tax would be the best thing to attempt. And if that doesn't work, you know, go with a slight property tax to fund roads. That's also perfectly legal in St. Louis for cities to do that. I think a general sales tax is the worst idea. It's not like there's so many out-of-region shoppers going up to shop in those communities that they're going to, you know, fund it on tourist shoppers and the like. And it's just a bad tax policy.
David, as we wrap up here, I was listening to my three martini podcast today. Jim Garrity, National Review, is in Kansas City speaking to on behalf of Show Me Institute. We'll talk to you again, of course, next week about that. Any other big events coming up you want to promote?
Mm-hmm. Well, we've got this great event in Kansas City. We've got a lot of people coming out for it. We don't have any major speakers lined up in St. Louis yet, but we do have some smaller events planned for the summer, and all of it is up at showmeinstitute.org on our events page. So I hope people check it out. I know you've got listeners online all over the state. We've got upcoming events in Springfield and Joplin as well. I'm ecstatic that we're back doing a lot of public events, sort of back in that scheme of things after a few years of doing less of them. So I hope people check it out at the webpage and join us as often as they can. And thank you to you guys for being a part of some of our speaking events in the past.
Thank you for having us and being a partner with us these last 3 years. David Stokes, Director of Municipal Policy at the Show Me Institute. David, thank you for joining us. We'll talk to you next Tuesday, and stay dry, my friend.
I'm trying to, and good talking to you guys. Talk to you next week.
Excellent, excellent. Tim, when we come back, Kirsten's Corner, I've got some proof here that Ivy League schools, colleges in general, do radicalize our young people, and I've got a sad example of that to talk about when we come back on the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show on 101.9/94.1 News Talk STL, number one for live and local conservative talk.
For podcast articles and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
I think we are being manipulated, specifically youth, to their frame for the world is TikTok. And if you look at TikTok, there are 52 videos that are pro-Hamas or pro-Palestinian for every one served on Israel. I think that we are being manipulated. I think Americans are easier to fool than convince they've been fooled. But if I were the CCP, I'd be doing exactly the same thing. I think social media is sowing division and polarization.
4:51 on the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show. I gotta tell you, I think we should steal an idea from the Mike Ferguson Show there, guys, and steal the idea of showing our playlist of the music that Joey plays during the show, because Joey, you playing some hits there. I'm glad you let that play a little extra so I could get into that, because that's some good music there.
Sam Cooke makes that real soul music.
He does real soul music. You know, Tim, TikTok, of course, is manipulating our young people. We've seen the studies that show that the algorithms will show one particular type of content over and over and over. We've known for decades now, 50, 60 years, that our public institutions, our colleges and universities are influencing and radicalizing our children for the bad. Well, we've got proof of them doing that, and we're going to talk about that next on Chris's Corner.
Chris. Chris.
And if you don't know, now you know.
And now, Chris's Corner.
You know, I always say that the left, the radicalists, have not had a new idea in 50 or 60 years. If you look at their chants, they're all the same. They have the same type of tactics. You know, when it came to the 60s and the civil rights era, a lot of the protests, a lot of that momentum came from our college campuses, but they weren't noted for the Ivy League campuses like MIT or Harvard and Yale and all that. I'm sure there probably were protests there, but those protests from the civil rights era were from colleges in general around the United States. That's why, to me, why it stands out so clearly to me now, starkly, to see all of these anti-Semitic protests that are happening on our Ivy League campuses. These are the institutions that are going to produce the future leaders, the future judges, future presidents, future leaders of our country. And to see just outright blatant anti-Semitism at the institutions at that level is very, very frightening, because those people will be our future leaders. I don't know if you guys remember a story a few weeks back. There was a U.S. ambassador who pleaded guilty to spying for China. That gentleman said he was radicalized while studying at Yale University. His name is Victor Manuel Roca. He's 73. He was arrested in December in Miami and accused of gathering intelligence for the rogue communist state of Cuba since 1981. His activities came to light after an undercover sting operation where he detailed his clandestine activities for Havana and praised Fidel Castro. Roca was sentenced last Friday to 15 years in behind bars. But I found what he said in his statement very interesting, and it seems to apply to what we're saying today. He said this in a statement. During my formative years in college, I was heavily influenced by the radical politics of the day. My deep commitment at that time to radical social change in the region led me to the eventual betrayal of my oath of loyalty to the United States during my 2 decades in the State Department. Today, I no longer see the world through the radical eyes of my youth. My long and successful transition to the private sector culminated in my becoming a top international executive in the mining sector for well over a decade. The latter, however, cannot erase the damage done during my earlier career working for the government. And as I said, these people that are at these Ivy League institutions, Tim, these are the future leaders of our country. And if they're being radicalized to hate their country and say that this is a terrible country while they're young and in school, how are they going to feel about their country when they're in the top echelons of government? Are they going to feel like this man here, where he's not going to have much of a conscience and can sell his country out? And what does it say about the judgment of these people who are going to be the future leaders, who cannot hold Hamas accountable for creating the atrocities they did on October 7th, but want to totally blame Israel for everything that's happening in the region? That scares me, to have people that myopic in the future being the leaders of our country. And that is Chris's Corner.
Mm-hmm. Chris, are we teaching people to pursue the American dream or to destroy the American experiment?
That's an excellent, excellent question. I would probably say probably the latter, Tim.
Depends on where they are, right? Depends on what part of the country and what university they're at. Chris, these were the elite universities of our country. They now seem to be Marxist melting pots. I mean, they just seem to be destructive. Exactly. I wouldn't send my kids there, even if it was offered to me for free.
Speaker Stump Speech, 507.
Yes, we're going to talk about the big ticket items teed up, ready to roll in the Missouri legislature if Republican leadership has the will and the ability to get him across the finish line.
And then at 5:24, Randy Tobler, host of the Randy Tobler Show here on News Talk STL, will pick his brain on his thoughts on some of these topics that are highlighting the news. You are listening to the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show on 101.9/94.1 News Talk STL.
For podcast articles and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.